This is Channel 2 over. This is Channel 2 over. And in the middle of the visit with Mack Weaver on Saturday morning, the 12th of April, 1969. And this is the beginning of Channel 2 over. The beginning of Channel 2 over. And towards the middle of the visit with Mack Weaver on Saturday morning, the 12th of April, 1969. This is Channel 2 over. This is Channel 2 over. And the beginning of the middle of the tape, the visit with Mr. Mack Weaver on Saturday morning, the 12th of April, 1969.
Up this iron just covered, and they're just blooming. You won't get three peas that long.
Yeah, I've seen them like that.
Well, you didn't what make it?
No.
Well, that's what it was. I found something didn't look to see. And I think I was about two or three days late planting these here. But I just planted them. That's black eyes. That don't look bad for black eyes, does it?
Oh, they look promising.
Who the hell could have that? And Lucius come over for the lot of the house. He did have that. And Lucius went over and rented it out from under him somewhere. And I reckon taking the whole thing, you know, don't know. Now, he spent a lot of money. Lucius Wood put this fence around there.
Oh, he did.
See, he's got horses, three horses down there.
Yeah. Well, now, where's Lucius living?
He lives in that house right down.
Right there?
Yeah, just the other side of Frank's.
Oh, oh.
You look, get down and look right by the corner of Frank's house. There. You can see it.
Yeah.
Back in there. It's a little two-story house around there.
Yeah.
He lives there.
Well, that's a nice place. That's off the highway and everything.
Yeah.
And Frank lives here?
Yeah. See, been trying to get someone. He didn't have time. He didn't want either both working. And I had the blue and flu three times this morning. When I moved here, and I killed them out.
Rid of them?
Yeah, I get rid of those quick. I treat it myself. I don't get the...
Oh, yes.
What I use is 4 and 5% malathion around the edge and blow it up under that.
Yeah.
And then I work on the inside, you know.
Yeah.
You can take these sulfur candles and you can burn them and stay out of that house for two or three days and you've got a fumigator for anything. That's an old remedy. Did you ever use those?
No.
When I go to move in the house, I always get you a pan of water and put that and put a brick and put a little set this sulfur candle on that there and close all the doors and don't go in for about 48 hours.
Uh-huh.
At least 24.
Yeah. And just let that sulfur candle burn.
And let windows down. Then you ease in there and don't breathe nothing and open the windows and things as much as you can.
Mm-hmm.
One fellow, I was fixing to move in his house and he came by and opened the door and that morning. And when he opened, went in there then, didn't know nothing about it, you know, and he just walked on in, you see, because it was his house. And I had the doors. I didn't have them locked. I had them closed. And so that he didn't let me know he was coming or anything. And I told him, I said, don't you ever go in a place when you see something and smell something, don't smell right.
Mm-hmm.
I said, he says, he'd like to kill me before I got out, get the windows raised and get out of it. I says, it's dangerous, and you're not supposed to do that.
Yeah.
And that'll kill everything that's in the house. Now, I had to put this seal on. I didn't know I needed to put on a seal right when I first moved you and jack it up four inches.
Yeah.
I didn't know it to be, and as soon as I found out it was termites, I treated it.
Let me set up.
Well, the reason that I was saying that, I always try to talk around a little bit with common sense in school. I noticed when I was in the fourth or fifth grade, something like that, in arithmetic, started studying arithmetic, that I studied arithmetic, you know, and I think to myself, well, I'd see back over now where father and back of the book, you know, where it's all together, you had to figure them out. I says, you know, if I get this here while it's easy, good, it'll be easy for me, and I'll get back over on that hard stuff.
Oh, yeah.
I thought that myself, you see. I've always tried to figure out something, you know, and study and use myself for some benefit. I don't cater too much to drinking and rough stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, sometimes I get mad. I'm about as rough as old plays rough. But I don't, you know, I try to not do that. That's,
yeah.
That's for cats and dogs
yeah.
to do, not and dumb brutes.
Yeah.
So that...
I asked him about a few people in Micanopy, and I didn't tape that. I asked him about Buster, and he made some little private remarks. Then he said, Buster's getting heavy. And I said, yes, that stomach, he ought to take that off. And he said, did I know how to do it? And I says, no, I didn't know. And he told me.
So that...
Now, Buster, if Buster would watch his eating, eat a good breakfast.
He says... I eat more at night. I says, that's your trouble. I says, I knew it before you told me.
Yeah.
I had some doctors will absolutely argue that you ought to eat and lie down full. Dr. Zoll used to be at McIntosh, not very much older, not over 10 years older than I am. And that was years ago.
Yeah.
Way back in the '20s.
Yeah.
I went to him down on his, was talking, you know, and I told him. I told me, oh, he said, you're eating wrong. He said, you want to eat and lie down. He says, cows and hogs, and they'll get fat to lie down and keep the stomach full and lie down and sleep and get up and eat again.
Mm-hmm.
I says, yes, that's true enough, but you fatten them to butcher.
Mm-hmm.
And I says, I hope they don't butcher me. And he argued to me, and I just quit talking to him about it.
They lie down and get up to eat again, but they don't lie down and sleep.
No, they rest.
They just rest. They just rest.
Well, don't they sleep at night any, or do they just rest?
I thought they slept. I don't know, Mr.
Weaver. Well, you know, when you said they didn't lie down and eat, they do at night, you know.
Yeah.
But they even sleep in daytime, too.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Not as much as I guess at night, because they get up and graze at night.
That's right.
About 11, 12 o'clock.
Yeah.
They get up and graze at night.
Yeah.
Especially moonshine and night.
Yeah.
In hot summertime, they do more grazing at night than they do in daytime. That's reason to get fat.
Yeah.
Then they'll go lie down, chew the cud, you know, and sleep, you know, go together.
Yeah.
And they'll rest part of the time. I watched them.
Yeah.
And just to study the nature of them.
Yeah.
In fact, I bought and sold cattle, nothing but that. Back in the 40s, 3 years, what for dairy cows, beef types, anything. Bought off the market and hauled certain stuff and sold on the market and went up and bought.
Hmm.
I kept.
You bought off the market and brought it out here and resold it?
Brought out there and some of it I kept all the year and some of them I didn't.
Yeah. Where was your place then?
Well, I had, you know, Keep's big pasture down there. I had,
oh, yes, that's right. You told me.
But he put 40 head in there, and I went to take mine out, and went along, and his went to dying, and he lost money on it. If he hadn't done it, I told Mr. Keep, I said, Mr. Keep, now 25 more heads, all you better at least we do, you won't have no pasture, and people will go taking them out. Well, that made us, when that man done that, it made us all go taking ours out. Well, I had a velvet bean crop, and it called me to take move mine quicker than I want to use a. Is they brought calves.
Mm-hmm.
Is brought calves. Now, I got ahead of time. I went to the market, and anything looked like it was about 2 or 3 years old. It had pretty good milk type in it. I could look and tell, you know. And there weren't a few signs that you can tell on with your hand.
Oh, really?
And I tested my hands and eyes and color and way to act, I could test, and I could tell some about how much milk the cow would give when she brought a calf if she took care of. That has a lot to do with it.
Uh-huh.
Much to do as anything else.
Yeah,
care
and you had a little rations.
Yeah, and it pays to feed them before they get poor.
Yeah.
Cheaper. Beef type or dairy cattle, either one.
Yeah.
And
that's what I hate about it down here, these long, dry spring months. When they got calves on them, is the worst time for them.
Yeah.
They ain't got nothing to eat, and the calves pulling them down.
Well, you got to feed a little long, then eat if there isn't something. I'd take mine by them in the summertime and carry mine and feed them cottonseed meal, the cheapest feed you can feed.
Yeah.
Now, you may not found it out. You may not have been taught that, but when they can get plenty of filler, give them a pint of cottonseed meal. Don't cost you much. Just a pint, yeah. Don't count them. You see the difference.
Yeah.
When they can get plenty of filler out, you don't...
I learned that the hard way.
Well, I learned it come up on the farm, you know, and knew all of that, you see.
And is that right? You learned it back on the farm?
Yeah, when I was a kid. See, I looked after the cattle.
Yeah.
And the horses. And Buck looked after the hogs.
Yeah.
Of course, we could either one feed and tend to them. Of course, I watched Sam just what he done just as much as I did with what I was doing before I wasn't learning.
Yeah.
Of course, someday I figured I may want some hogs, and I got them. And I made pretty good money on them.
But, well, now, you were ahead of me. I never learned that. I didn't learn that until I come down here.
I could tell when I was talking to you. I could have went over and helped you out a great deal, but listen, you can't always say nothing to nobody and tell that most people don't believe it unless they see you in it. I'm not in it now.
Yeah.
But I was reared on the farm, and from a kid on up, 8 years old, I'd get out and plow with a turning plow, mm-hmm. breaking land it like a man.
Yeah.
10 years old, I'd plow out the middles, and they didn't let me side up much, but year two, I was siding up as good as anybody.
Mm-hmm.
I was about 11 or 12 years old. I'd plow with any man all day.
Mm-hmm.
I liked it.
Oh, yes.
It was fun.
Let me tell you something.
You know, once you get grown, it's hard if you learn and remember after you get... when you get 35 years old, you go to forgetting a lot.
Yeah.
And... we only grew a few watermelons on the farm up in North Alabama. About... 1 and 2 acres, maybe half an acre, more for own use and mm-hmm. sell us. 4th of July, we'd sell or cash them the day before to town and sell them.
Mm-hmm.
If we had them out early, and maybe haul 2 loads of watermelons 8 miles to town with a wagon.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
we had about 2 or 3 acres of turnips once in a while in the fall of the year and haul off a 2-horse wagon load just pulled up and washed and put over in that tire.
Mm-hmm.
And sold them that way, just about that size. There are certain ways, and my dad and mother always planted in the moon and they never fail. And if you go and plant, your tops grow on the grow in the moon, your tops grow on up higher. Full, if you plant on full moon, it'll be lower, or the plant surface that to make the root when the sun's going down.
Mm-hmm.
And if you want to make tops, plant on the just on the go of the moon, right on dark nights, like that mustard seed. Those 2 big stalks, I'd say that.
Yeah.
Well, there's a whole lot of way 2 months a year older than Frank's. And Frank's, and look how much larger they were.
Mm-hmm.
I just left those 2 to let them see, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Frank, I told Frank, I said, Frank, you better come over and let me teach you how to farm. He said, I need to let somebody. He didn't get a mess out of here, and I got lost. Stuff all by. Those had been cropped a whole lot. Did I left that to stand up?
Mm-hmm.
Let people see.
When you were buying the cows and, you know, wanted to sort of test them for milk,
mm-hmm.
kind of how'd you do that? It's easy to look at a cow and, you know, put your hand on it and this and tell it. I know that.
Well, you know, a cow and a calf have veins, don't they?
Yeah.
They got a hole way up here.
Mm-hmm.
Larger that hole, the more milk is going to
be. Oh, yes. Yeah.
And
yeah.
If you want to tell where it's a full-blooded Jersey, a good-blooded milk type, it's got a little sharp top and right up in the head there. And you can see it. I can see it sticking up.
Yeah.
And tell just about how much I put my hand on it. I put my hand on it.
Yeah.
And I was about to get mixed up in judging the horse's age. In fact, I got off on that. And you watch them, and different types of them. Well, I bought a little helper, paid a little extra price for her up there one day on the market. She was just about this high. She looked like she just about a fool about a jersey to me.
Mm-hmm.
She had that top right and everything, just going through the crack. Now, my niece was from Alabama down here, and she had went with me to the market. She wanted to come back home, and she was sick that day, and they went to the doctor. And she I said she believed she'd go out to the car, and I said, no, I'll just carry you home. And I'd been watching for this woman to come through, you know, sitting up there.
Mm-hmm.
And by the way, I looked through the crack, and there she came. I told her, I said, how about going on to the car? I said, I've seen something look good to me. I'll go back and buy it. Well, I paid the extra price for the pound, you know, I was buying the pound. And the fellow, White Wilson, was bidding again me. He seen it with me, and he told me later he quit bidding again me, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Supposed to be about 7 or 8 cents a pound was beef, Mark, but we done got up to about 11 or 12 cents a pound, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And he seen it with me a bidding on it, and he told me he was sitting up above me, and he said he quit.
Yeah.
And I was going to go a little bit more than that because it looked good to me. Well, I brought her on, kept her, fed her around the place, around the lot where I lived at, and had to fix up. Fed her some cottonseed meal and give her some good strength, you know, and I carried her down to the pasture and put her in that down there.
Mm-hmm.
Then I had to come back and put her in the bean field. I don't believe it. Yeah, I did. Then moved her. Andrew Smith wanted, he bought four from me. Wanted him one milk cow. I says, he didn't much want that one. But he's paid me my price on everything, and he wanted one to give 3 or 4 gallons a day, and I told him, I said, Andrew, now you're picking out what you think, and you went up down and bought one from Madera and paid $60 for it. Now you think that's it, but I'm going to tell you right now, that little heifer right there is going to be only one, the whole bunch of real poor to mill.
Yeah.
And that boat comes through tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
And she's already bred, I believe. And yes, she is already bred. Hadn't been took care of. Weren't as large as she should have been, but me have given her that cottonseed meal for a week or two, then carrying down and put her where there's plenty of grass, you know. She growed and developed pretty good, and she mm-hmm. was 2 years old. And he had a good place to fix it. I told him, I said, that's going to be the one you keep. And he is proud of the other ones. When they bought the calves, he kept that one and sold the rest of them. He said, I won't tell you, Mac. He said, I'm getting 4 gallons a day and getting a pound of butter every day and milked away.
Well, I'll say. Is that right?
And I told him, I said, I believe, of course, she wasn't even spraying then.
Mm-hmm.
I says, I believe that don't give nearly twice as much milk as every one of the others mm-hmm. as the cow and the mm-hmm. calves that you... And well...
Well, Mr. Weaver, when they are in flush like that, giving all that milk, you got to feed them right smart, haven't you?
You got to feed them plenty.
Yeah.
It takes so much to keep that cow going, and the rest goes to milk.
Yeah.
And
sometimes the first of it goes for the milk and pulls the cow down.
Yeah. And you got to feed her, yeah. Some of them are a little heavier milk, more of goes according to the milk, and you got to feed her and make the cow pour.
Yeah.
But this one was just about an hour. I got in time before she is in too bad a shape, you know, to develop her.
Mm-hmm.
And when she was 2 years old, she gave that.
Mm-hmm.
And I bought lots of them. Now, L.K. Edwards used to breed the best type. He bought his bull from the university up there.
Oh, yeah.
And he told him save the best for him. And I bought all his milk type a long time.
Oh, really?
I went over and bought it.
All his heifers?
All of his milk cows when they got ready to sell them. Sometimes he wouldn't sell them until he brought a calf and he could see what they was.
I see.
Then he'd put the price on it. And he put his price, and I never said nothing but one time to him about the price on it. Twice, I believe it was. I looked at him, and he'd tell me, and he didn't want you to worry him either. Says he said he'd let you know when he got ready to sell him, he'd let you know.
Yeah.
Well, I'd always ready.
Yeah.
Because I had a few calls for a guaranteed cow.
Mm-hmm.
And they wanted him to give so much milk. Well, those would give it if you'd feed them.
Yeah.
And I'd always keep them to drop the calves to get that high price.
Yeah.
They didn't want to worry with them. And I'd feed them. and fed him balanced diet and grazing. I fed him according to the way the what grass I had.
Yeah.
So that I'd go over there and buy him when he talked. And he had one or two that I didn't much like. And one that's a little bit afraid of a stranger don't sell good. You got to watch your...
Yeah.
You got to watch on that. Boy, they used to come sell them.
Yeah.
And when they get used to you, they just let you do anything you want to with that cow. But you tell your customer that.
Mm-hmm.
And so that I'd tell them, I said, now anybody buys a cow that pays me over $100 is guaranteed. Any cow I sell you under $100 is not a guaranteed cow. I says, I'll tell you what I think about it, but no guarantee behind that. Because it gets down to 75 and 6 and 50. I says, you can't do that. But I says, I tried not having it. It ain't worth the money. I don't want to sell you one that isn't worth the money. And
well, now, was that this LK or his daddy?
That was his daddy.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was his daddy that I bought from.
Mm-hmm.
So that he'd call me up and he didn't sell one till he give me a chance at it. And I told him, I said, all I ask you to do, Mr. Edwards, now, just let me know and you price them, and if I can give the price, I won't be no argument.
Mm-hmm.
And if I don't think I can stand that, I may say something may not. Well, I paid him in $10 of all but two. That's his price, and I told him one time, I said, Mr. Edwards, don't like to say anything, but I says, I believe you got that little about $10 too high for me.
For you to make anything?
Yeah, and the one that's little shop, strangers, and they're hard to sell.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll have to sell them cheaper. So that, and some of them would be dry, you know, and I'd have to figure on that, but he usually had them priced pretty well, about right. So that I had to take them and guarantee them then to give so much milk.
Mm-hmm.
But I didn't do that on people that was honest too, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I couldn't afford to do that. Because if I did, you see, they could not feed them and then claim and then take another cow and let it run down and claim
yeah.
the same thing on them.
Yeah.
But one that took care of the cow and fed them good, you know, I put the guarantee on them. I said, now, listen, if that doesn't suit you in every way,
mm-hmm.
and I said, you, I'll come by and I'll get another good one and check with you and see if you're satisfied, if you are all right. Those Richardson boys both spoke to me, and I come by and showed them another cow, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I asked them, they said, no, says, that cow's doing what you said, you thought they'd do.
Mm-hmm.
Says, we're well pleased, says, we wouldn't get rid of, we'll near take what we paid you for.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you see, that's boosting me, you see.
Yeah.
And,
well, you know,
the man that was buying for me, I tried to give him what he bought. And, so that,
now we talk about this trees. One's an ironwood, and then there's another one that's 20 years old.
Hardest wood that they are.
Yeah.
You just, if that
yeah.
gets dry, you can't cut it with axe.
Yeah. Right? How does it hold in the wind?
Oh, it's tough.
It's tough.
It's strong. But those it goes out and their limbs will break off. They broke off of some of these trees here, you see.
Mm-hmm.
Down there, they will get to break off. And
yeah, now this one?
About 20 years, the limit is about the age of them.
Yeah.
About 20 years.
They grow fast.
Yeah, they grow fast, and they've got the prettiest bloom you ever seen.
Yeah.
Now I'm going to clean that out after Jimmy Dale's cross down that.
Yeah.
It'll be pretty little lady.
Yeah.
Out there. I usually go out there, I usually have it cleaned up way before now out there in front of the place.
Yeah. Well, now, who helps you do that?
I do it by myself.
That's kind of hard work.
Yeah, I need exercise.
Yeah,
when I'm carting, if I'm on a carting job, I get too much.
Yeah.
See, I'm not strong like I used to.
I see
be.
You got your.
That's my daddy's old axe.
What's that?
That's my daddy's axe.
Oh, it is?
Yeah. I wouldn't tell the
well, high in the
that's
world.
Steve, that ain't like. Now, here's one maybe cost as much as that, and of course, that's old. Daddy had that a long time.
Yeah.
He always kept him a new axe and used for certain things, you know.
Yeah.
And when he kept... Now, there's an axe that's never been used much since two souls.
Yeah.
It'd be even better on
it. Yeah, and look, and the shape of it, it's yeah. sort of cumbersome.
Well, that needs to be, should be ground down.
Yeah.
Yeah, see, it's been worn down, but it's just going to hold.
Yeah.
I use it more for just to breaking things and hitting hard.
With yeah.
It. That's what I fix it up for. I knew yeah. it now I don't steal it.
Yeah.
Shoot, you can tell by tapping on it. Like, it's
yeah.
I don't know if
Steve
has. Well, you want me to talk
to
more about
that?
You hear him steal
much? Don't sound like it, does it? Well, good Lord. Good Lord.
I see you.
Well, Lord help us. Oh, that...
Do you use it?
Swear to goodness.
Do you know what...
Sound more like a hollow log.
You know what, I've seen fellas with me with certain razors and I was barbering.
Yeah.
And man had heavy beard, you know.
Yeah.
I went across there and that razor just rattling, you know, steel rattling in that razor.
Yeah.
I'd warn some of them get the rein twisted, didn't know where I was going to get my chair next. And I'd seen that they was getting nervous. I knew for the trouble. I told them, I said, wait, just, I said, I'm just about to, I'll be to you just a minute. I said, I know you're in a hurry. I knew what he was moving for. And I better put it, I'll have out my pocket. I'm a carpenter.
Well, you won't have much, yeah.
Yeah, it's worth a lot when you need one.
Well, if
you
haven't got none, yeah.
So, I was barbering one time and I had a Henkel twin, and that thing is just rattling and singing. I just go in this way right fast with it. Of course, two or three customers, and I knew that there's on the road going through. Well, I had to talk to him a little bit. He started to get up about three times, and I talked him out of it and leave. He fell over in the chair, you know, and I lied at his face, and I steamed it good, and I started right up here, and I just said, see, that thing just rattling, you know?
Yeah.
I hadn't got just a little, I told him, I said, now, if you're in a hurry, be still. Of course, they open my mouth, you cut them if you make a long, quick stroke, you know?
Yeah.
I went to shave him, and he said, wait a minute. He said, you know, I got to tell you something. He said, that's the best razor I've ever had put on my face.
Is that right? Is that right?
And he says, you can use a razor. But he says, the way that razor's singing on that other man's beard, he said, I thought you were just giving him the devil. And I started to leave. Then he let me go back shaving.
Well, what was it? It's just like this metal.
Yeah.
It just had metal in it.
I started to go down and get a saw and come out here and show you. It's, everybody tries to buy, but it's over yonder on the job. I can't get it. But you can just tell the difference in it. I got a knife somewhere in my pocket. I ain't sick.
Well, can you, if you go to the store, could you find one like that?
Yeah. I can tell you what kind of axe you're getting. I never have got a good Kelly. People's crazy about a Kelly axe. A king cutter is a good one.
Yeah.
And I got a whole hatchet down here at Thrasher's, 2 1/4 one time, and nobody would buy it because it's so high. And you touch it, it just rains.
Oh, really?
And that would ring there if it's new, but that axe is old, been way down, and it's too thick.
Mm-hmm.
Really, it doesn't sound any better.
Mm-hmm.
So that. I bought it, went to work at Wilson over there, and a doggone fella told me, you know, he threw my hatchet down, and he told some of them like didn't know how to carpenter, said he could tell them looks my tools. Well, I just cared what tools I needed and needed out there, because I know one of the big jobs people are stealing.
Oh.
During the war.
Yeah.
So that I heard him tell the fella that, then I heard him tell the superintendent. Well, the superintendent stood down and we were building a garage and seen me cut out the whole side of the garage there, and me and my helper put it up, you know. And he walked behind me and me tell him where to stack that piece of lumber, and he watched the superintendent of the job, you know, he watched when I called for a piece, put it up at fit. The whole side of the garage.
Yeah.
And up to the windows, come up just right, and this other fellow was having to cut out and everything. He is a boss man.
Yeah.
And, well, I heard him telling that, and I heard him telling the superintendent. The superintendent didn't say anything. He was standing behind me, and I seen his tools with shoes, and I just never paid no attention, just kept cutting and fitting. market position and I cut it there. It put up my feet just like the drove there.
Yeah.
So the, got out, we got out of cotton work for a day or two. He told him that Saturday night, I worked 3 days. Said, we won't leave Mr. Weaver anymore. Says, he's not a cartoner, no way. You can tell from looks at his tools. You can't do that. I can borrow your tools, you can borrow mine. Yeah. I loaned fellas my tools. You take these tools, had them in good shape. I said, you take these now. I said, these has been used now. I says, if you go in there with all new tools, they'll know you ain't no cartoner.
Sometimes these fellas don't want a fella on the job that knows more than they do, Mr.
I know. That was it. I knew that was what it was. Well, Mr. Rose is, he is assistant superintendent. Had two superintendents over there. So that he says, one day he walked up there and he says, are there anybody here who knows how to figure yardage and check trucks? Nobody answered. I didn't want the job. You didn't pay too much. Didn't say nothing, you know, and he tried to come back again around. And I said, yes, Mr. Rose, I know. I can figure it for you. He says, well, you stay here. We didn't have more cotton work to do in about 2 weeks. He said, you stay right here a few minutes and I'll be right back. And I'll carry right out to the job. I need a man out there bad right now. I went out there and it only paid for it $2 a week. Now I was getting about 60 some odd in cartoning, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I went out there and checked it for him, you know. One day he drove, Sunday afternoon, he drove up out there. He said, I got along, Mr. Weaver. I said, well, I'm pretty good, except that I said, this year's just not enough exercise for me. I said, you see my trails where I've been walking around here? I haven't stayed here in one place. I got to have exercise.
You mean you always had to have a little exercise,
yeah,
huh?
I've done it so much until my blood won't circulate, but don't.
Yeah.
And so that went ahead. He says, do you bring your cotton or tools over there? First time he'd stop, you know. And I just went ahead and went on in there, you know, and went and checked him, you see. And so that... he says, we tried to build some light towers the other day and said, we hope they fell down on it. He says, how about you going by the office this afternoon and tell Mr. Craig to check you back on as a carpenter? And we'll put somebody else checking for you on that job. So that, I said, yeah, I'll be glad to do that. I says, I may do worse a job than you all do. He says, no, he says, you can do it. He says, I've seen what you can do. Now, he says, I'm going to tell you, I'm going to have plenty of men there to do the work. You don't have nothing to do but just look at it before. That put me over the carpenter crew, you know, everything. Well, I went to doing that. None of them couldn't cut nothing to see it. And they said, it's a saw. Well, I said, that's my saw. Try it. And they couldn't saw a line. Well, I was doing it all, and I just told him that night. I said, I don't need but about one of those men, one or two of them, to help lift up those things. I says, they can't any of them fit nothing, cut it right. I've got it all to cut. And I says, now, he says, which one is that? And I called out one that knew something about it. You know what he says, great goodness, that's the best man. He says, he's a nigger too. I says, he's the only one, by the way, can do the work and knows him my tail. And I happened to have him the first day, two days that I worked on that over there. And I could tell him what I wanted. He'd go and get it and have it ready for me.
Mm-hmm.
So that we went ahead and I get giga-headed sometimes and get mixed up with speech. I guess you know that, don't you?
No, I never noticed it.
Yeah, I do. No. I can't think. I'm weak to that. It's a weakness.
You've been gone too long.
If I go to blow up, I'll stop and go and lie down. See, I try to lie down a little bit every day. Go to blow up, I'll stop and go and lie down. See, I try to lie down a little bit every day. You see, my blood goes down in the daytime and gets too much in the feet and legs.
Yeah.
And I like lie down a little bit, it comes to my heart and push it back up.
Yeah.
Does that make a lot of difference?
Yeah.
And I can't lie at night all night.
Well, now you've always noticed things, you know, and took care of yourself and learned and observed all these things.
Oh, yeah, I haven't been to the doctor in over 20 years.
What's that?
I haven't been to the doctor, and those polio shots like to kill me.
Over down here?
Yes, boy. I would have went ahead and went to the hospital, but they'd still say, I can't stand the needle anymore.
Oh, really?
See, I'm in the First World War, and I can't stand it anymore.
Is that right?
And they won't do nothing. I had my teeth pulled up here, and that stuff just that got me down there. I had to quit. I got to get my lower arm down there.
If you ever get me...
Brad Chandler, I saved these dogs here when... I saved these dogs on a teaspoonful of half of sugar and a few drops of turpentine and a few drops of kerosene. And if I had to give them that and fed them fried meat grease and salt of fried meat grease, I might have got in the hospital, I'd have got shots and let her die.
I said to him towards the end, he said he had to move around, keep his blood circulating. I said, well, now you understand that. You've noticed all these times. And that's when he said he hadn't been to the doctor in 20 years. And then if he hadn't had his own remedy, those dogs, when they were poisoned, would all die. And he told me what his remedy was. And that's the end of this visit with Mr. Mike Weaver this Saturday, the 12th of April, 1969. And this is around 4:45, Channel 2 over. Channel 2 over on this Mike Weaver's reel. And this is Channel 2 over around 4:45. And the end of that visit with Mr. Mike Weaver, Saturday morning, on the 12th of April, 1969. Now, this is a visit on Tuesday, the 22nd of April, 1969. We've been by several times. I wanted to see him to get some honeysuckles sprouts and to let him talk about his remedies. And he did both this morning. This is a visit on Tuesday, the 22nd of April, 1969. This is Channel 2 over. We caught him just in time, just the right time, to get some of the honeysuckle and to hear some of the remedies. People was going to tell me about some trees. He planted four or five trees down at this man who lived just down the hill there. Instead of that, he talked about the man.
Set out some trees down here, some cedar trees. Of course, it was too wet. Some of them died. And the one big one sitting right down there, Mr. Elton, had a little house down there. And he won't, well, I helped him build it for nothing. And he wanted me to move down there when he was sick, you know. I moved down and stayed a while. And then he decided to, you know, he's kind of cranky. I didn't pay no attention to it.
Who was that?
Mr. Elton that died down there a few years ago.
Oh, I didn't know him.
I reckon before you came here, I think you made axe handle. He's a good old man.
Oh, you made axe handle?
Yeah. And he, plow beams and all that kind. He could make chairs, too, or anything. He had equipment down there, shop and everything.
Oh, I didn't know that.
So that he was cranking his children, they couldn't get along, you know. Well, I didn't pay no attention to the old man, because he worked for me way back in the 20s in the fur business, and he's a good old man.
Uh-huh.
Well, see, it's like everybody else. He'd pull little deals that he oughtn't to pull, you know, and things like that. But I just let it go, you know. He thought it was all right, but it wasn't. He was working for me, and I was paying him a salary. And see, he wasn't supposed to do nothing on the side.
Yeah.
He tried to do that. And so that I went on down and worked with him, you see. I mean, just help take care of him. And after I got to where I got sick myself, and I couldn't hardly walk. Nobody wouldn't go down there and see him. Nobody in town. And I was down there, just didn't feel like I could when I had that blood clot in my leg.
Yeah.
And I went down there, and the man was dying, and I tried from 7 o'clock that morning till 11, about after 11 o'clock, and he died 5 minutes before I could get anybody to even come down. I called up to call the sheriff's house, and I called, but I couldn't get hold of none of his people, and couldn't get the doctor there. His doctor, had a patient in his office down at McIntosh, and he couldn't come till about 11 o'clock, and he got there afterwards. And I called Mr. Sherrill up. He says, I haven't got a soul I can see. I eventually got a hold of him. Nobody wouldn't answer the phones nowhere. And so that I could tell he is dying, you see, and he's scared too, you see. So that I was trying to get him over the phone, and then he'd try to get up, and I'd run back to him, you see. Well, if I could stay down and held him up, he might have lived a little longer, but it wouldn't have done no good. He couldn't live.
But now
his heart went bad.
He had, you always planting pines?
No cedar. I planted 4 cedars around that little place when I went down there, and I stayed there about 4, 5, or 6 months, you know, and cut all his wood. He burned a lot of wood, you know, and cut about 10 loads of wood a year for about 10 years, and never did charge him a penny for it and go and haul it. He had a little cut-off saw in a long time, and he was afraid that I'd get hurt, and he didn't think that anybody could run that saw but him.
Yeah.
So I told him one day, I said, Mr. Eldon, I said, I believe you're a little bit wrong in this. I said, I think that it'd be better for you to teach me how to run this saw before you get to where you can't and let me run it. I said, I've been watching you. I believe I can run that the cut-off saw. It was dangerous. It's about 30 inches saw.
Yeah.
And he had his motor and everything to run it and cut his wood.
Yeah.
I'd pick it up, put it up, and let him run the saw. Then I'd take it down and keep it out of his way.
Yeah.
So he eventually agreed. He said he just didn't feel like he could, didn't believe he could. I said, now's the best time in the world. Let me see if I can run it for you. You can sit there and tell me.
Yeah.
And now, if I do anything wrong, you tell me. I said, because I don't know how. I play like I didn't know anything about it.
Yeah.
I didn't know anything about it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'd watched him so much, I knew how. So he went ahead and sit there, you know, from then on. He didn't bother to saw. When he wanted wood cut, he let me cut it.
Uh-huh.
Well, it was dangerous. If you wasn't careful when you're cutting anything out of where and it binds back at the back part of it, that thing will kick and throw everything anywhere. Uh-huh. I've got a fire saw in there. I told the fellow, I said, now listen, don't you run that fast. I said, you watch your material and some of this is going to bind at the back.
Mm-hmm.
And when it does, that saw's going to kick. And he kicked and he grabbed with that hand and cut his hand right across his way.
So you really have to watch.
You got to watch any of them. My arm gets a sore some days before mine kicks away.
Well, I told Faye what you said. You know, the day we was talking about these remedies and all, and you said you'd had to learn them remedies. You hadn't been a doctor for 20 years.
Did you know old Dr. Daly? Who guess he's the one over there?
No.
You know, him that worked at Wilson now.
Yeah.
That's his son.
Yeah.
He is my last doctor, and I wouldn't have called him then, but I was married at that time back in the 40s, and my wife called him around there and wasn't no use. I knew what was wrong with him and what to do.
Yeah.
And he came out about, I didn't say nothing, twice or three times, you know. I just had to let wear off itself, you know, and I had ulcers in my stomach, you know, and they'd burst and I'd vomit come up. And it was tough for about, I lived on milk and toast for 4 years.
Oh, you did?
Yeah. But you had to study yourself, didn't you?
I went studying when I was in school.
You had to know what was wrong.
When I was in school, you know what? So when I studied physiology back at Colin, I don't know what to call it now. They changed the names or so much thing. And hygiene and physiology, what it was called back at that time.
Mm-hmm.
And I read about all these things. It's just a good doctor book to me.
Yeah.
Because I impressed it on my mind.
Yeah.
And all I studied and didn't matter where I was going around watching, working. If you was working out there, didn't make any difference what you were doing from kid on up. I watched to see how you did that.
Now, that's it, Mr. Weedy. You watched.
And I learned that you remember it much better than you can reading it.
Yeah. All that reading is hard.
You read so much that there's so much in there that you don't use.
Yeah.
And if you watch and see. And I learned the carpenter and the reading and the arithmetic. When I was figuring that up, it showed me how to figure everything, you know. Told me in arithmetic how to do it. And I remember that. Well, I went on out and went to carpentering. I've never been a laborer.
Yeah?
But I studied it and practiced at home when I was a kid. I'd sit up till about 12, 1 o'clock. A lot of times making crooked axe handles or anything. I just liked it.
Oh, really? Is that right?
Now,
and you watch somebody else.
This is the biggest thing. There's a few had oxen in those hills and gulfs to haul the logs out that had big oxen, you know. That's what they used to get in the bad places. Didn't want to put the mules in there.
Uh-huh.
Pull it out. Didn't have tractors then. So Buck and I went out. We cut a big 2-foot black gum down. You know, they're tough.
Mm-hmm.
Last a long time. That's hardwood. So we measured off here 2 inches, and we took the saw and saw, cross-cut saw and sawed them off and made the mark around it. And we sawed that mark out and made them just as true as we could. Well, granddad or dad, it was granddad's, I think, old big 2-inch auger that had a handle up here that you twisted around with this,
uh-huh.
just a piece of wood across and the hole bored in that. And we bored holes. Well, I made me a furnace wagon out of that, and that's my wheels. And I made the hounds, axles, rocking boosters, and the tongue, and everything, and made it work just like a furnace wagon.
Well, now say that again, Mr.
I said,
Now, what did you do with your block that you cut out?
We made wheels out of them.
Yeah.
That was the wheel. We bored a hole right in the center. I took a thread and
come
around here and made that round.
Yeah.
Perfectly ground.
Yeah.
Then I had my hole right in the center of that.
Yeah.
Then I bored this hole, put that little point, you know, of a bit, right down in that little hole.
Yeah.
After I'd made my wheels round.
Yeah.
And I made, that was my wheels.
Yeah.
Then I cut out.
That's the worst part.
Well, it was all, and there's a lot of figuring in those hounds and rocking bolsters and what was that other bolster? I used to call the name that quick, you know.
Yeah.
The rocking bolster is the front one that goes round through your wagon and turn, you know.
Oh,
yeah.
That's a rocking bolster. Then there's
Now you couldn't make that out of wood.
I made it out of hickory.
Oh.
Went out and cut the hickory down and split it open. Had nothing. I got the old drawer knife I made this with in the house.
Oh.
And I lost it. Let Buck have it. Mary and Alvin, and I found it over here in the trash pile one day. And boy, did I get that.
Yeah.
You still got it?
Yeah, I got it. And I had to make a hound put on it.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I still have that.
Yeah.
Well, going ahead about the way you do, you make your axles first. After you make your wheel, put your axles in now. Then you make your hound that comes back here where it let it work around this cross piece back here with Ben.
Yeah.
I guess you all have seen those, haven't you?
Seen them, yeah. But all I've seen is them metal ones, you know.
Well, you can. I made that all out of wood. Then we used to make the furnace wagons mostly out of wood.
Mm-hmm.
Make the spokes and
rims and
everything made out of wood. You never seen one furnace wagon?
Not one of those made out of wood.
Well,
now, Mr. Weaver draws it in the sand.
Your front wheel's here. Here's your rear wheel. Mm-hmm. Here's your rear. There's a front wheel there. All right, you made the wheel. This is the wheel here. And it was a big 2-inch hole in there. Then you made this rocking bolster and the axle, and make it go down and so it wouldn't catch nothing and work it crooked and so it looks of it too. It went across here,
mm-hmm.
The axle. Then you made a small came over here, back here, a piece over here and fastened. Then you put your rocking bolster and your tongue in there.
Mm-hmm.
Tongue back here, there's a tongue coming back here.
Yeah.
This was the tongue here.
Oh.
I mean, this is, see if I can remember what they call it.
I cut most of it, but now he does something interesting. He yokes up a bunch of yearlings.
Well, we yoked up a bunch of yearlings, broke them to work to that, and I built a yoke and made the yokes go around this way and put across the necks over there. And we put those on there, and then we'd hitch them up to this wagon.
Mm-hmm.
So we
yearlings?
Yeah. Broken through work just like a mule or anything. You see mules work, I know, but maybe never seen oxen work.
And they'll pull
more in the woods than the mule can, and get around in the woods better than the mule.
And, no, I never did work them. See them work.
And they won't get stuck in soft dirt, and they'll walk right on through it. It's kind of soft, and the mule gets scared.
Yeah.
He's afraid of it.
Yeah.
And they work good in the mule in the woods, so that we went ahead and made that and put that. Then we. Bunch of, let's see, there's about five or six, three of my cousins, Buck and I think it was. We made a trip. We had to walk 3 miles to school, and it's about 3 miles over to the other road to come back home. And we made that 6 and about 4 miles. We made, it's about 10 miles round where we hicked them up, and we'd come to branches and water where we'd run and let them water, and then we'd stop and let them graze, you know. And we took a whole day going around out there and just looking around, and we'd walk a piece. They began to get hot. We'd cool them. like that. And, you know, you get a lot more kick out of that than these boys. And the fun was just break them to ride. Now, a mule can't buck at all. It's to break them to ride. We broke them all to ride, too. They had to ride. Mm-hmm. Then we'd get out there and run races on in those calves. And some of them get gentle, you know. And we learned that we'd throw a hat under the feet, or throw off one of our hats under the feet, you know, and they'd jump and throw that boys on it.
You had to prank a little bit.
Make him buck, you know, making him run, you know, scare him, make him run.
Yeah.
And he'd buck and jump at the same time. The boy wouldn't be expecting to be gentle, you see. And one day Buck had his calf here, so gentle, you know, mine is a jersey. And he was mean. He was hard-headed. So that he was full but a jersey. The Buck had his, and he made it get down the ditch, you know, and he was going to jump on it. Every time he starts to jump straddle of it, you see, down in this ditch, he'd jump out. Luckily, he thought he'd jump quicker than the calf did. So he jumped to come up on that calf, and the calf jumped out, and he fell farther back right down that ditch.
Miss Weaver, how'd you learn how to doctor your ulcers?
Ulcers?
Now, that's mean when you got them that bleeding like yours.
Well, yeah, his the last stage, you know. I went to 7 different doctors, and they all said, thought I had chronic malaria. Now, Dr. Strange is one of them. Dr. Daly, Dr. Zahl, and I've forgotten the other's name. Let's see, Dr. Roseburg. Dr. Roseburg said I had something to roll through the stomach. But they didn't have too good treatment back at that time. So that we went ahead and I went up to Alabama. They told me I'd have to go up in the mountains and stay about 3 or 4 months, you know, for those ulcers to get the malaria out of the system. So I went on up there, and I stayed 3 months, and I wasn't any better. And I went over to, I kept asking people who was a good doctor up there, and said Dr. Walker Jasper at the hospital. Well, most of my family lived close enough to they used him. And I decided one day I'd go and see him, check with him. If I still believe that they was wrong what they thought it was. I put this on. My blood gets low at night, and it's cool, and I got chilled this morning. I thought somebody put this on.
I got chilled, too.
It's too much. I meant to be at work by 8 o'clock, but I didn't get there. I meant to have this thing on. So that the reason I told the children, wanted you to wait, he said, I want to take up a right smart time with you. He checked my heart and checked my lung, checked my lungs. He says, no, it's not what I thought it was. He says, when you walked in and you had a TB in the last stage expression on your face.
Oh, really?
I said, doctor, not anything wrong with my heart and lungs. They checked good. But I says, there are with my blood and my blood pressure. And I hurt right in here, the only place I hurt. And it was bad that day. And I'd eat down in the restaurant and really shouldn't eat if I'd have known it, but I didn't know it at that time. And I seemed to me like I ate roast pork or something. Got the worst thing I could eat. He took all of that away from me, you know. He says, no wonder you hurt down. I didn't even feel those ulcers in your stomach. But see, when these other doctors checked me, you know, a lot of times maybe they weren't sure. And you see, you got to catch them. You got to check the person more or several times a day. And every day, you can't check them once a week and find all these things. It's impossible. Ain't nobody that good. It takes time to find it.
Mm-hmm.
So that he went ahead and checked that. He said, I know what it is. He said, you got an ulcerated stomach. What it is. Says it's bad, says, but I don't believe it's too far for what I can cure it. But I couldn't stay there. My business is down here, you see. And I'd spent about 3 months already up there. So that I went ahead and he said, I can put you on the x-ray, but it's not any use. He gave me stayed on it a long time, and I had to get down to drinking sweet milk and dry toast. Just put it in the oven, let it dry crisp through, and sweet milk. And I went and bought me a cow, Jersey cow, and I fed her the best kind of feed, and had plenty for it to eat of everything, and a balanced diet that had everything in it, you know.
Uh-huh.
You can put it in the milk, you know.
Yeah.
It's not like this old milk we have to drink now. It ain't. It's no good.
Yeah.
I tell people that. It don't have effect on that diet from a cow has.
Yeah.
And fed right.
Yeah.
No, ain't nothing to it now but chalk in there much. You can put, you won't see that much clobber on a quart.
Yeah.
Of milk
right
now.
Yeah.
Man, there's that much cream on a quart bottle of my cow when I fed it. I bought the best Jersey cow this year. That's me. Don't let nobody tell you they don't, because I done checked it.
So you had to do that for sure.
Barbering. I'm a professional barber, too.
Oh, that's back when you was barbering.
Yeah.
Why, Mr. Levi, did...
Go, just look here. You can tell the way I can run the race. I can run that over your face there and you won't feel it, sure.
Yeah.
I can give you the best haircut you ever got.
I wish you would.
I'm not going to give you one like I got. Now, I'll pay $2 for this one. Dipping in here now. You look down there.
You don't do that.
Dip in there and then you don't do that. That's a bull hack.
Where'd you get that, Mr.
Got it in Gainesville.
Oh. Don't tell me you went all the way to Gainesville and paid $2 for that hat.
Two's a man been kind of new. Little, he could do a better job than this. And listen, I've had him cut my hair before. I'm not letting him cut it. And I say, well, maybe he has learned a little the last 5 or 6 years. He'd been working in there, but he hadn't.
He hadn't watched anybody.
Well, the way I learned the barber, go and sit in the barber chair and watch all the barbers. And the man owned had about 5 or 6 barbers in the shop.
Yeah.
On Saturdays, I'd go and sit down there, and I was about 14, 15 years old when I went to cutting hair in the country.
Yeah.
And I walked in there and I seen... Seeing the barber, just as fast as been to college, you know.
Yeah.
Just as fast.
Yeah.
And gap the hair up and it out to work and try to trim it out.
Yeah.
I look back over there and the man doing the business, he had cut this way. Cut and going up slow. Took it that way.
Uh-huh.
And turn out more customers and make $5 more a day than the rest of them did. He had 25 cents a haircut.
I've always
And 35 was all he got at that time.
Oh, yeah.
So that, he'd make $5 more than the rest of them. And looked like he was slow, and everybody in the area who could had waited on that.
Yeah.
And I waited on him, too.
Yeah.
When he cut my hair, it tapered according to my head. It didn't sure dip in here and come out like this. And
that's the way they do me, Mr. Weaver.
Well, it's a hard law that burned me up. Wait, you, I'll cut your hair. Now, he'd cost me because I didn't take out life. I was sick.
Yeah.
I just doing this to let you see how it looks
when
you comb it.
Yeah.
Now, I can fix my hair if you'll cut it right any way I want to. I can part it. I can even take it right down and part it right through the middle. And he'll stay there. I can't see just what I'm doing, but usually I get it pretty well right.
Yeah.
And change my look to a whole gray day.
That's right. Yeah.
That's where my daddy used to comb his all the time, right in the middle.
You know, right.
Back then, all of them parted the hair in the middle.
Yeah.
I wore mine on the side. I can't see where I got that knot, and it's just cut, and he put some stuff on it that won't. It won't do just like I want it to probably now.
Uh-huh.
But it come right down that way. And wouldn't I look like it when my hair's down this way, like some of my hair.
Mr. Weaver, what's the best remedies you got? Like turpentine and all those things. What do you keep in your cabinet?
I'm going to finish a little bit more about that. When I came on to Florida, I still took the doctor's diets and they kept, and they wasn't doing it good. Of course, it takes a long time to stop that from as bad as I was.
Yeah.
I kept hearing them when I first got out the world's ulcerated tablets. I think they're in Chicago. I think that's the place I got out.
Uh-huh.
I still use them. Well, I was there, and I couldn't eat, and I knew a spell was fixing to come on, man. So I told her, I says, write to them and find out what they're advertising over the radio and the Willard tablet, and they'd send four for a sample.
Uh-huh.
I said, you go ahead and write them. I said, I'm going to try that. She written them a letter, and they sent four for a sample. Take one after each meal, you see, if it wasn't too much. And I took these two. I took one that afternoon after I drank the milk and ate the toast. Now, I rested that night. Next morning, after I drank my milk and had my toast, I took another. Next afternoon, and the next morning, it's all gone. Well, I got two nights rest.
Is that right?
And you know, I told her, I said, tell her what you do. Tell them to, you just go ahead and write them, send me a bottle of them. COD. And I said, if they ain't good, they'll send them. If they ain't no good, they may not send them. And they came out on in. They sent them COD, you know, like I said. And I went down and paid them out, of course, for $5. And five, that caused me to have to pay by doing that, you know. But I didn't mind doing it because I had the receipts, you know, and if it wasn't good and it guaranteed they couldn't go through the
So night. They give you a little rest at night. Let me take a look at my old gelatin.
A chiroid biosalt tablet helps me a little bit. That's supposed to work on your gallbladder, and that helps a little bit.
Uh-huh.
And I keep a bottle of that all the time. But they promised to order it, and I've been back twice, and they didn't have it. You've got to, listen, Dr. Walker told me that, and Jasper says, now you've got to be your own doctor as much as anything else for that.
This is just about the end of this tape, so I'll call it off and go over to the next reel, Mike Weaver 2. This is the end of this reel. This is the end of Channel 2 over. This is the end of Channel 2 over. And now I'll go to the next reel, Channel Mike Weaver 2.